woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Oh. Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
Oh, it's, it's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new... So, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
The f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Holly, Smith Weber. The board S&P futures down 2, NASDAQ futures down 1.5. It's been pretty damn boring waiting for the Fed to speak, but I think virtually everybody thinks that this particular Fed meeting might mean more than most of them that have the big hype and then don't go anywhere. But I think... I was actually asked, Kevin, how are you?
Good. You talk about the Fed meeting and any big announcements and shifts in emphasis and so on. And I hearken back to one of my economics classes with the late great J.T. Crotto, who you knew quite well. And
wrote the book, The Economics of the Credit Union.
I don't even remember what the policy or the announcement was, but JT, you know, he came into class. Anybody got any questions before we get started? Somebody said, "Well, what do you think's going to happen? You know, after the president's big announcement?" And he must have hemmed and hawed on it and thought about it, and you know, gave that thoughtful look for, you know, probably a good 2 minutes of silence. And then finally, he looks at the group, at the class, and he says, "Not much." We moved on.
He was a character, that guy. He was one of the, at the time, I think, wasn't he the only full professor in the economics department? Or
might have been.
He was.
And he was certainly you know, accomplished outside of the economics department. Wasn't he on Kennedy's Council of Economic Advisors?
And, I think so. And he wrote the book, The Economics of the Credit Union.
He was pretty renowned. He was big in not-for-profits and credit unions and, you know, a lot of expertise there. So, yeah, interesting. But such a character, you know. He was so dry, you know, his approach to things. It wasn't, you know, he wasn't outlandish, but he was absolutely hilarious.
Well, the if you want to read, I mean, sometimes when you want to understand, you know, kind of, well, if you can or understand all of economics, which you really can't because it's such a, especially in a, well, an alleged free economy like ours, the pieces of the puzzle are so multiple of, you know, there's so multiples of numbers that you really can. I think right now when you talk about the supply chain disruptions and so forth, and I by the way, I did read the or listen to the thing you sent me the other day. It was pretty interesting. You get a feel for just how complex the system is. This is probably the most horrible, but it's almost akin to the human body. It is so complex that, well, don't worry, you shouldn't feel bad. Only your liver has a problem. Well, yeah, but if your liver has a problem, everything feels bad. Everything is sort of connected to something, right? Right, Kevin? I mean, it's
and that's you know, that's really it. That's what we're experiencing now, is that you know, getting that all back to some kind of an equilibrium is possibly not possible. How's that for using butchering a phrase? But it may not be possible. But if it is, you can see why it's going to take a long time.
Well, I mean,
and that's, you know, that's part of the inflation issue. I think that, you know, we have that issue going on at the same time that we have the financial system induced inflation, and so you know this is all troublesome. I do see that lumber has actually gone down in price like 25% over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, it went up three
Maybe
times, and now it's down some.
In a good direction on that. It's not going to go all the way back down. But
well, it was so absurdly higher than, I'll use the term, original cost, that you can only imagine how that area drew some attention. And that's really the part that it is, I don't know, I almost have to write something. It is so difficult to kind of understand how everything affects everybody. And again, it's not like I do, but I'm trying to. For instance, if you see something wrong in the system, like you point out all the time, say there's not enough truck drivers, or there doesn't seem to be, there's not enough lumber trucks, or there's not enough something. Now, you and I sit there and go, gee, we're not doing so hot in what we're doing right now. I think we are, but that's not the point. I mean, what if we just sit there and go, you know, hey, the phone's not going to ring to go back to the restaurant or anything soon. By the way, let's go get our truck license, and looks to me like they could lose three or four more drivers from, Winnipeg or wherever the hell you get lumber to the railhead in South Dakota or someplace. I mean, I don't know anything about the lumber distributors, but say that's the deal, and all of a sudden we have good credit, we have a few bucks, and we buy maybe one tractor trailer, and we need two more, and we go to the bank, and they go, for you guys it's like 10%. What do you mean for us it's 10%? When these other guys are getting stuff for 2 and 3, not that we should get it for 2 or 3, but it should be 5 or 6. I mean, all of a sudden, the inability for smaller places to get credit at a reasonable rate now stops the normal economic vibrancy where a few people see a hole in the system and act to fill it. That is what causes our economy to be, you know, what it is, and generally the jealousy of the world is because if you and I go into the hardware store and we see, hey, for whatever reason, everybody stopped making 16 penny nails. Guess what? Let's see if we can find an old nail manufacturing place somewhere. Or what does it cost to buy a machine? All of a sudden, we're making 16 penny nails. That's what caught every. Thing you see, every business you see, is somebody somewhere who saw a need and acted to fill it. And in order to do that, you need some capital, you need some loans, you need some steel, you need whatever you need. Every single thing you see, everything you buy, is a result of that. And I think people lose their well, now when you see Amazon will take care of everything, or Home Depot takes care of everything, what do you need? I think we're kind of messing with the pooch a little, Kevin, because just about every other thing you see, why is there a cleaners there? Because they looked around and said, there's a 5,000 people here that are further than 3,000 yards from the next nearest cleaners, and people like to walk to the cleaners, and guess what? Here I am. Right? I mean, that's why you're there. I mean, and I think we lose respect for why that happens. I mean, Maddie's brother's in the restaurant business, and I'm going to say that he's going to sit there and go, God, 15 restaurants closed in this neighborhood. All these people got to get in their car and drive somewhere to get a hamburger. Why don't we just put up a place right here? I mean, that's what makes our system, doesn't it? And the more you put...
Well, it is. And then you have, it isn't just the longer term, sort of that vision that this can succeed. I can put the cleaners here. But it's also these constant shocks that we get, and some of them are bigger than others. So it's always going on. You always have these things that are kind of jolting and, demand shifts and all of that going on. But at the same time, then you get something like the pipeline shutdown for a week. So what did that mean? What did that mean to the trucking industry? Remember, we're short 50,000 drivers from what the need is right now. And you can't just go out and make and take somebody and say, here, get behind this truck, drive it around the parking lot for a little while. Good, you're an expert. Go. It takes a while to get your CDL. It takes a little longer to actually get, acclimated to the job and able to do the job well. So you've got, this is not something that's going to get addressed real quickly. Okay, Now, you get a pipeline shuts down, and what happens on the East Coast? They look and they say, okay, we have to get gasoline trucked here. I'll pay anything. Go to Indiana. Ask the people in Indiana. Ask the trucking companies in Illinois. What, you know, what can you send me? I'll pay you anything. We got to get some gasoline out here. So all of a sudden, now you've shifted truck drivers away from what they had been doing when there was already a shortage, and you put them into something else for a week, 10 days, without, you know, probably took another week and a half to for the pipeline to get fully functional again, and so now you've just completely disrupted the system, and all of that's going to show up in pricing other shortages or other slowdowns and, you know, reductions in supply, and it's all over the place. And I think that's, you know, people don't really realize it. I just tweeted out the video for our listeners that, and I see Matt was right on in about 10 seconds retweeting it. But, you know, I think it's important that we have a grip on that, because, you know, when we start talking about infrastructure bills, these are some of the things that really need to be addressed in an infrastructure bill, not social agenda items.
Well, I think, Kevin, anything that's there's a shortage of. I mean, and I keep looking at, again, somebody who started a firm on his own, PTI, and started a trading firm on my own. I mean, you always look at the potential of success versus the potential of loss, right? Because most people that are successful at a business, it probably wasn't their first business. They probably tripped along the way on one or two others, right? But that's the nature of somebody who wants to be an entrepreneur. But right now, I have never seen a more varied environment where you're getting your ass kicked by regulations and by cities and by states. And I don't know that you can pick a long-term business right now. I mean, there might be some. I mean, clearly, if there's not enough truckers, and you and I see a lot with three older trucks, and we look and we send them into somebody, tractor units, so I'll be accurate, and you and I send them to the mechanic, and the guy goes, well, for $5,000 a unit, I can have these things, you know, good as new, and you'll get another 500,000 miles on them. I mean, we're idiots not to grab those things and see if we can find a few guys that have driver's licenses and go. But I mean, would you open up a brokerage firm now with the amount of regulations and the favoritism towards the few big ones? It'd be really hard to do. Would you and I mean, in this lumber shortage, would we even think of opening up a lumber store, given the traction at the Home Depots and the Menards and the Lowe's have? I mean, they're going to get everything. We're not going to get anything. I mean, it's incredibly how difficult it is now. I mean, if all of a sudden Maddie's brother wanted to open up a restaurant, I got to believe the city's, if he's on the same block or neighborhood with a restaurant that has power, political power, good luck getting the permits. It'll be a nightmare. I mean, I think it's gotten very, very difficult to be that entrepreneur right now, to the point where people, plus it's a lost art. It's kind of a lost art. I mean, people go to work for somebody else. I mean, nobody opens up a law firm on their own now. I mean, you go to work for one of these other guys. I mean, it's, I think that's, we're running into
well,
this.
Well, Tom, that's borne out in the numbers, too.
Yeah.
I'm looking at a chart right now of the number of open small businesses. And we're down 51.6% from January 2020 to today in small businesses in leisure and hospitality. Which would include restaurants, so it's specific to what you're saying. All small businesses are down 37.5%, and this is as of end of May. I mean that's crazy, but that's the damage we've done. But because we sort of have reorganized in many ways the political structure because of all the new authorities granted. The difficulties in opening up and filling that void are much greater than they were 18 months ago.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. And you just wonder, I was on, telling Maddie, I was on Joan Esposito's show. I say, I love doing that because it's, A, she's terrific, but B, you end up with, and she had a, it's a pretty liberal thing. I mean, I kind of I stick out like a sore thumb being in the middle, but
oh yeah, she's on 820, so
yeah,
darn right, it's going to be liberal.
Yeah, yeah. So,
but and that's okay. That's you know, that's the station's pretty straight up about what their format.
But you know what? They always let me talk. You know, when I get on, and
yep.
And so, good. And she has a co-host. I forget the guy's name, which is really rude. He was a head of the Democratic Party in DuPage County, I think. Nice guy, and you know, and some of the stuff. Well, the topic was inflation, right? So she must have been listening to us, and I, you know, I just from the get go, what, you know, what is it? What causes it? And it really isn't any. There's not a collective knowledge, really at all, what it even is. And how it starts and who causes it. I mean, it's something I don't think is, I mean, clearly in our generation, it was taught, right? Because it was going on. I don't think there's any, you know, one of the listeners called in and he seemed like a bright guy and he's, what do you mean? It's all just supply chain problems, blah, 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 blah. And I said, wow. You know, I said, in the supply chain stuff, I said, and I've talked about it with some people on my shows. Yes, it causes temporary problems. And it does those things, just like the Arab oil embargo in 73 was a problem. It was going to cause oil prices to go up and from an outside shock, and it was going to cause other stuff to go up because they're dependent on oil. I mean, but it's not, if it hit at a normal time, it wouldn't have been that big of a problem. I said, but just like now, when we've been pushing money into the system now for really 12 years, we should have been on the lookout for general inflation, and all it took was like a little bit of a fuse, but it was sort of there anyway. Just like in 73, they had already been pumping money in for 2 years, and just sort of happened. It's like when it seems like whenever you let yourself vulnerable, something happens, right, Kevin? Duh. I mean, did COVID make it worse? Well, sure, it lit the fuse, but it really was happening anyway. When you look at medical stuff, you look at education, you look at areas where, you know, we lie to people about. I said, you know, but it's not like it wasn't there. It's the general inflation, the thing that happened from 73 to 82 was not because of the Arab oil embargo. It was because of the Fed, right? And so I said, you just have to be careful. The questions, you know, she always asks great questions, but Kevin, there isn't a knowledge about it. She says, what's the worst thing about it? And I said, it's uneven. Some people get impacted and don't. And I said, if you don't have an escalation clause, she says, well, should I have an escalation clause in my contract? I said, Joan, if you got one coming up, if you don't put it in there, there's something wrong with you. I mean, if you're going to sign a 5-year deal and you don't have one in there, and we have a 10% inflation for 5 years, where does that put you? Down 50, the way I count. She looks at it, she goes, I never even thought of that. I go, well, start thinking. I mean, duh.
I mean, well, and you know, what you're describing is, you know, we have the catalyst. It's sort of like, you know, if you allow your whole house to be a fire hazard, then when you get a kitchen fire, the house burns down.
Right.
Whereas let's just say it's a building, you have, you know, sprinklers, you have what, you know, fire suppression maybe, or maybe you just have good smoke alarms or whatever it is that you need so that your house is not a fire hazard, then when you have a fire on top of the stove, it's a fire on top of the stove. It's a kitchen fire. It gets put out. That's what has to be fixed. And I think that's where we are is we let the whole house be a fire hazard, then we got our kitchen fire, and up in smoke it goes. And then, you know, we intentionally do some things that also, add to it. And as an example, slowing drilling on federal lands. You know, just when oil prices are ready to go up and just when that's going to be a big problem for us, we decide for ideological reasons that now is the time for us to stop drilling. You know, it's not like we dried up all drilling in the United States, but we curtailed it. And that, you know, that just pours it on. And it's, you know, some of this stuff, even if you believe in it as something that needs to be done, timing is a factor, and timing is a factor that has not been considered at all in some of the agenda items.
Well, our fine governor yesterday, either he did sign or is about to sign a bill. Essentially, he's going to ban, I don't know how long they get, give the couple that are still working, but they ban coal-fired plants in the state of Illinois. environmentalists are happy as hell. Okay, now I for one think that, I mean, I've seen old locomotives when you can see them once in a while, belching along burning coal, and I see what the smoke looks like, you know, so I sort of get it. I mean, I'm not that dumb. But I also know how many people that voted on that, or how many of the citizens realize that the single greatest depository of coal is the state of Illinois. Worldwide. The state of Illinois has enough coal for like 2 centuries. Now, it's high sulfur. It's one that people don't necessarily want to burn because it's dirty and it has a lot of sulfur in it. Now, don't you think that some money somewhere, and the people, if you ever went to one of those money shows back in the day, they were a riot. Any place where you could be, shall we say, separated from your cash in terms of an investment were in those places. I mean, they had, you know, securities firms, they had futures firms, they had guys want you to invest in vending machines on the tollway. I mean, you wouldn't, but there were oil and gas deals, there was everything. And the thing that struck me, Kevin, is almost all of the research, I won't say all, but almost all of the research in the last 100 years on coal was done in South Africa, because they had coal and they had an oil embargo on those guys as long as there was apartheid. I mean, which I didn't realize until I was at the show. I should have realized that, I guess. But and that a lot of the advancements in coal technology are from out of South Africa. So you can't tell me that in this state we should put a little bit aside on the budget and try and figure out a way to burn coal cleanly. I bet it's not impossible. They were going to put that one plant in Illinois where all the carbon dioxide and the sulfur, they were going to find a way to bury it in caverns or something and then use it for industrial stuff, the sulfur. But it never got off the ground. After they pulled the federal financing on it or something. I refuse to believe that it's impossible to make coal clean. I mean, we just said, just because we haven't figured it out yet, but I mean, someday
it might be. Isn't there like a clean coal plant in northwest Indiana somewhere? You know, clean coal.
Well, the one in Michigan City was pretty clean, and now that one's closing. But it's
And when we say clean coal, that's cleaner coal. It's not, you know, it's not 100%.
Well,
clean.
Now what they did, Kevin, they used the same technology they used to use at Pullman in the paint plant. If you went by of course, way back in the day, nobody cared, right? But when I was there, I mean, when you painted something, you had paint residue because they used, you know, oil-based paint. What they had, they actually had an old aircraft engine, Kevin, of all things, like maybe a DC-3 or something, and they had essentially a waterfall of maybe a 50, 60 feet long waterfall of water, hence the name waterfall, and the aircraft engine was on the other side of the water. So it dragged all the air from the paint booth through the water. And the water ended up, any droplets got caught in there, and at the end of the week, you basically were shoveling out paint mark from the bottom of there. It took all that stuff out of the air. Well, the one in Michigan City, I think, did the same thing. They used lake water. If you went by, there was a tower that had all kinds of water running down. I think they ran the smoke essentially through the water. Now, I don't know if you can do that if you're not sitting next to Lake Michigan, and I don't know what the technology was, and I don't know how much they pulled out versus how much got out. I mean, I'm not a scientist, but I think there clearly is a way in some areas. Now, whether it was worth it or not at the price of natural gas, I don't know. Probably not.
Probably not, but then once you start to see the prices of natural gas and oil increasing, you know, look, oil is, you know, is oil on the way to $100 a barrel?
Maybe.
Might be.
So, yeah, I mean,
now when we start looking at cost-benefit, it's a little bit different take on it.
But it would be very difficult. I mean, it's sort of akin to the state of Alaska banning cars. You know, okay, we've got all this oil in the state, and we're not going to let anybody use it. I mean, clearly coal is dirtier, and the stuff in Illinois is dirtier. For those that don't know, that's why you see all the coal trains coming from Wyoming and North Dakota, because that coal is a lot. It's a different type. It's a lot cleaner than the stuff in Illinois. They probably haven't burned Illinois coal anywhere in a long time, Kevin. But it isn't to say that it isn't an incredible storehouse of energy. And if somebody can find a way to use it, there's enough there like forever, you know. But So just to give up on it, I don't know why you do that. I mean, there might be somebody around who could figure it out. Maybe not me or you, but maybe Maddie. Maybe Maddie has a, you know. But, you know.
The thinking is that that things like wind and solar and all those, if we redirect our efforts to that, they can produce a mass. But what are we talking about at this point? Less than 15% of the energy consumption. So when you are at a time of great disruption in the economy, is that the time to be making that redirection? And I would argue that it is not. And in fact, politically, it's not, because I think there's, as we see what unfolds over the next couple of years, that's blame that, deserved or not, is going to go on the Biden administration. Whereas, emerging from the pandemic restrictions, all they really had to do was just sit back and accept the economic growth news every month and pat themselves on the back. So, I guess I understand the mindset that says, take advantage of the situation while you can, because in 2 years you might not have Congress, but boy, I think it's going to bite them in the butt.
But we'll do absolutely nothing. We won't have any kind of a service, especially in the poorer neighborhoods, in the wintertime, to give some a city guy with a infrared camera and go and do a quick survey from somebody's house and see where they're losing all their heat, and maybe have, if there's any kind of a subsidy to help somebody, split it, some insulation or some caulk. We could probably save way more energy than we're wasting if we just put our mind to it. I mean, we don't do anything.
An interesting thought, Tom, and I think you're probably right.
SP Futures down 175, NASDAQ Futures down 150. Be right back. You guys are going to tell me all about this Major League Baseball stuff on the ball, foreign substance? The guys were grilling me last night about it. I profess I knew nothing about it, but when you guys are done, I should know everything about it. We'll be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Starks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm laughing because I'm sitting here reading about the umpires giving cavity searches, but only on commercial breaks. Did you guys read that? They could check any part of the pitcher's body. God, it's like going through the airport. Anyway, it's God. Where we are in this world is scary, isn't it? Anyway, SP Futures down 3. NASDAQ Futures up 11. We're switching from where are we? We're switching from June to September this week, so it is a triple witching week. The Junes would be the M's, and the Septembers are the U's, the Spoos, and the at least they call the Junes the Sperms, but that didn't go to. It was always Spoos because it was the easiest one to say. Over in Europe, we've got again the Fed meeting was a 2-day meeting, started yesterday. The announcement, and the press conference are today, and I assume our friend Pedro is still banned, Manny.
As far as I know.
Yeah, he never asked back after asking a bad question, and I hate it when that happens. DAX down 17.1%. These guys are real slow, too. FTSE down 64 cents. Let's call that flat. CAC around up 5. Call that 0.1%, or darn near flat. Asia, Nikkei down 150. That's 0.5%. Shanghai down 38. It's 2 days in a row. These guys have been down almost 1%. I don't know what that means, necessarily. Hang Seng down 201.7. The Shenzhen Exchange, which is not one that we normally give the one to Shanghai, was down 2% this morning, so it's been down all over China today. I'm not sure why. Yesterday, Dow was down 94, S&P was down 8, NASDAQ was down 101, which is roughly the same amount we were up on Monday night in the last 10 minutes. So we're kind of Zerosville for the week. Bonds, 1.49, which is like pretty much unchanged. Bund minus 0.24, down 1 basis point. Japan, positive 0.05, unchanged. Oil, up another 32 cents, 72.44, we're over 72 now. The Brent, 74.43, up 44 cents, and I guess it hit 75, which is, you know, it's a new high for quite a while. Natural gas, down 3 cents, 3.20, and RBOB is unchanged at 2.17. Gold, which is, again, we're going nowhere. It's up a whole 40 cents today, but 1856, it was 1890 last week. Looking to push through 1900. Now it's a long way from 1900. Silver up 16 cents, 2786. Copper unchanged at 433. Crypto, which was over 40,000 yesterday to Bitcoin, today it's 39,143, down 961. Matty, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have a couple of significant issues on the expressways right now. Well, at least one is significant. The other one is affecting traffic. The significant one, we'll start there. It's on the inbound Stevenson just before Weber Road in the southwest suburbs near Bolingbrook. An overturned vehicle in the right ditch that happened just a handful of minutes ago. That's at Weber Road on the inbound side is causing significant delays with crews arriving on the scene and traffic backed up on the northbound I-55 there out in the southwestern suburbs. So keep that in mind if you're heading into downtown on 55. Major crash there that's in the ditch with crews on the scene near Weber Road. We also have a crash on the inbound Ryan at 95th Street that's blocking the right lane, and that's causing a backup there, too. So a couple of issues to the south and southwest on the area expressways. No issues on the Ford. I-57's looking okay. Once you get past that crash on Weber Road, the Stevenson opens up, and then you'll run into a little bit of brake lights near Cicero, but no accidents to report. Eisenhower's quiet right now, same for the Edens and Kennedy and Lakeshore Drive. Weather today, another just beautiful day as we wrap up the final days of spring here in mid-June. Sunshine with a high of 73, a light breeze, no humidity, just a perfect day before we warm up again tomorrow. Right now it's crystal clear and 62 going up to a sunny 73. For our Phoenix listeners, not so much. Sunshine with a high of 115 today. That's actually a couple of degrees cooler than yesterday, but still very hot for June. Right now it's clear and 95. In sports, the White Sox shut out the Rays last night in a battle of first place teams, winning 3-0. Dallas Keuchel pitched a shutout in that one. Cubs had a 2-0 lead in New York, but gave up three straight runs and fell to the Mets 3-2. And to make matters worse, Chris Bryant was hit in the hand in his first at bat, and he came out of the game. X-rays were negative. He's not expected to play today, but they're thinking he won't miss too much time. So that's
who's playing you?
Good question. Chris Bryant, X-rays negative on that hand. Diamondbacks lost to the Giants 9-8. Chief.
So I'm reading here about the new foreign substance rule, and just as a interesting, when I talk about longer of a story, I still remember this to this day. My uncles were massive baseball fans, right, and a couple of them were football fans because one played pro football. But I made a mistake of asking my uncle, who was a fighter pilot, a former fighter pilot in World War II, what's a spitter? Well, I got about a 15-minute rendition about when you put foreign substances on the ball that are slippery, sort of like a wing. I got the whole routine. I could have done a lift and drag class after about how it was so dangerous for batters because the air would actually run over the slippery spot quicker than the rest of the ball, and it would cause the ball to move dramatically, but it wouldn't give the hitter any kind of a clue because there wouldn't be any spin on it, any unusual spin, so it was actually very dangerous, and how it really should have been out of baseball a long time ago. And sure enough, one day, Kevin, didn't somebody in the minor league get whacked in the head with a spitter and die or something, and they finally cracked down on the spitters? And then Elston Howard used to, when Whitey Ford got old, he admitted in some book that he sharpened one of the buckles on his chin, on his, chin guards, to where it was like a razor, and he used to put a little slit in the ball. And if Whitey Ford put the little slit on top of the ball when he threw it, the ball would move crazy. And, but in those days, the ball would hang around for 10, 15, 20 pitches. Now, what is a ball? What's the average life of a ball, Matty? 3, 2.5?
As soon as it touches the dirt, it's out.
Yeah. Even, but they, if somebody gets a hit with the ball, now does that ball go out or does it go back to the pitcher?
That generally goes back to the pitcher.
So only the ones that hit like at home plate, where they're afraid they hit the plate and get all scuffed and everything, those go out as soon as they touch
the dirt. Or even if it hits the dirt, you know, the dirt at this, you know, the way it would typically be with a pitch could actually get a little, you know, dirt residue or residual dirt remaining on the ball. So yeah, they just throw those out as a matter of course. But it isn't what they're putting on the ball now that's the problem. The problem that they're having is what the pitchers are putting on their hands.
Well, that's my point. It's way different than a spitter, essentially.
Yeah.
So go ahead, keep going.
With everything that they have learned about spin rates, you know, they have all the high tech cameras now, and they're, you know, the ability to observe every little bit about a pitcher's track between the pitcher's hand and home plate. And they know that if you increase the spin rate of the ball, it gets to be that much harder to hit. So what the pitchers have done is they put sticky substance on their hands or on their fingers. One of the most popular is something called Spider Tack. And Spider Tack was actually created for strongman competitions to allow the competitors to grip things that they have to lift in strongman competition without dropping them. So you just, you know, by having the tacky substance on your hand, you can increase the spin rate on the ball because of your ability to grip it better.
Well, if you look at your hand, is it obvious?
So that's what's going on now, and of course, MLB is concerned because their game is getting boring. That, you know, 15 strikeouts in a game is a boring game to watch. And as Steve Stone likes to say on the broadcast, the real beauty, most of the beauty in baseball is what happens on the on defense, the great plays that people make, and that's where a lot of the excitement is. And by having fewer batted balls, you're eroding the beauty of the game. So So Major League Baseball desperately wants to clean this up, and one of the things that they now understand is that people are using sticky substances, and that's increasing the spin rate, which makes it all that much harder for people to get a base hit, to put the bat on the ball.
Well, if I decide I want to use some of this stuff and I stick it on whatever finger I stick it on, the index finger, the flip somebody off finger, is it obvious if you look at my hand? Is it a separate color or is it clear? I mean,
I haven't had my hands on it myself, so I couldn't tell you.
Because I mean, you last thing you want is the ump to go out there and having to press everybody's finger to see if it's sticking. I mean, if it's
here, pull my finger. I'd be ready for him if he came out and started messing with my first time he pulled my index finger. You know what's going to come off.
But you know, this is what happens. I think, and we talk about it in many different ways on the show. And when I say talk about it, is when you have people, government in the whether it's the securities industry, whether it's wherever it is, whether it's enforcing this rule, that rule, when you get to the point to where they schlock up their job so bad that if you're not cheating, you can't compete, that reaches a point you should never get. I mean, right now, clearly, if you're one of if you're the 10th best pitcher on a team and you're trying to make the Cubs or the Sox, and all of a sudden two guys that may be marginally worse than you start using this and are now ahead of you, you almost have to start using it or you don't have a job, right? I mean, it sounds like it's reached that scale. Maybe not with the big time starters, but with the guys like the Cub reliever who's been around for 12 years and has been good. He obviously has figured out a way. Now that guy all of a sudden has had a massive redemption this year, so you know I'm not putting it past him. But it seems like to be competitive now, you almost have had to use it, right? And that's a spot you never want to get, I don't think.
Well, and ask yourself about some of these pitchers that we have seen this year that all of a sudden are really good. You know, the Cubs bullpen would be a perfect example.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
You know, has Ryan Tepera ever been this good before?
Well, he figured it out.
And now we'll find out if it's tied to use of sticky substance or not.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if you're going to throw a curveball or a slider and you could find a substance that gave you just a little more spin, it wasn't sticky enough to where you throw it in the ground by the batter circle, you don't want it too sticky. I mean, you want it just right. You want to give you just a little bit, you know, whatever the spin rate is, you want to up it 10 or 15% so nobody really notices and you don't throw it, you know, you don't hit the ball either, right? So this stuff must be pretty good.
What they're finding is it's actually affecting the fastball more than anything else because for two reasons. One, a higher spin rate allows the ball to stay on the same plane the entire way. So a typical fastball, no matter how fast you're throwing it, when you throw it 60 feet and 6 inches, the last 5 or 6 or 10 feet, it starts to lose a little bit of velocity at the very end and it dips down a little bit and goes into the zone. And with batters being taught launch angle, they're able to connect on a fastball. But with the increased spin rate, it stays at the same velocity the entire way and stays on the same plane the entire way. So when a pitcher or when a batter has a little bit of launch angle on their swing, they're swinging underneath the fastball. And it's, like Kevin said, it's reducing putting balls in play astronomically because it stays on the same plane, which no pitcher's ever been able to do before.
Well, whenever you used to hear people say, Matt Weber has a rising fastball. No, it isn't.
Of course not.
Because I mean, gravity doesn't forget about baseballs, right? So it's a question of how long it stays up there. It's like
exactly.
It's like a sprinter. We're saying a sprinter has a finishing kick. No, he doesn't. Everybody's slowing down at the finish line. The question is who slows down a little slower than the other guy. It looks like he's gaining when he's really slowing down less.
Well,
right?
MLB announced before the season that during April and May, the first 2 months of the year, they're going to examine every single baseball that comes out of play. So every time a ball gets thrown out of play, they're going to take a look at it. They're going to review all of the video data and the spin rate data that's out there, and they're going to see if this is a real problem. And sure enough, after the first 2 months, it's a real problem. And
the nice thing is, you know, they can correlate those two. So ball came out of play. You know, they can correlate those balls to the spin rate on the pitches that that caused them to go out of play.
Yep.
Well, the it would seem to me that it would have to be a substance that just gave you a little bit of an advantage and really stayed on your finger. And then, well, some of it's going to end up on the ball, but it would have to be, you'd have to hit that ball with a microscope. I mean, it's not going to be obvious. Last thing you want is a big glob, because then you got to keep putting it back on your finger, right?
Well, I think what we need to do is that Stocks and Jocks needs to buy some spider tack, and
yeah,
then let's give it a try.
Well, let's go pump some iron first.
Okay, let's not do that.
Let's go pump ourselves up. What do you pump? What was the two guys?
Yeah, I'm good with not doing that part.
Hans and Franz.
You know, yeah. My upper body work consists of. Taking my kayak and paddling around in a circle on the lake and then coming back in.
Well, at least you know enough.
That's as far still, as I'm willing to go with it.
That's still pretty good.
At least you can get in the kayak and get out without falling. I don't think I can get in one without turning the thing over and landing on my head somewhere. How long does it take to get in?
First of all, you get in the shallow water, and number two, be sure you tether the paddle, because the last thing you want to do is lose that damn paddle out in the middle of the lake.
Well, I assume they float, but then again, you can't get over to it.
Yeah, how are you going to get yourself over there?
Up Bleep Creek without a paddle, as they say. All right, Kevin, what is...
So to speak, yes.
What is...
Hey, a different question. Just a follow-up on a conversation that you and Brendan had yesterday about, you know, how the way left and right have shifted their behavior. Because, you know, historically, the left has always been the one that pushes back on the rules and is not, you know, is inclined not to comply with what the man says. Gallup poll this week. Vaccinated people, do you think it is better to try and lead normal lives or stay at home as much as possible now that you're vaccinated?
I hope it's
what do you think the Republican response was?
I'm going to say they were lead more normal lives more than the Democrats.
87%. Democrats stay at home, 71%. 71% of vaccinated people saying I'm going to stay at home.
Well, if you totally believe all the hype and the fear and this thing, and there was a while when I think they needed to throw some fear at people, but it sticks. You can't just draw stuff back, Kevin. I mean, that's why you have to be really careful what you say. I mean. I do, you do, on our podcast. What if you were president or governor? And you can't just lob crap out there and expect people to, and all of a sudden, everybody's, you know, the Germans are our enemies, and all of a sudden now the Germans are our friends. Well, there's still people going to think, wait a minute.
We've always been at war with East Asia. Isn't working yet, or is it?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm going to have to say, the Trump group got all over the Chinese, okay, and there's an increase in now, and everybody thinks that. Yet you can't generalize what the Chinese Communist Party is doing. Doesn't work its way through to some poor guy who's living in Chinatown and has been here for four generations, so happy to be out of there. Make that connection. I mean, yet some people do, right? They generalize on black people. They generalize on white people. I mean, I don't like to be generalized as an old white racist. I'm not. And if I was black, I sure as hell want to be generalized as a gun-toting gangbanger. I mean, you got to be careful when you do that stuff. Because some people don't spend the time, don't have the intellect, don't have something to say, wait a minute. You can't generalize anywhere, right? Because there's always going to be an exception.
That's true. It's just interesting that everybody got the same messages, but one side versus the other is hearing it differently.
Bingo. Pretty much just what I said. You know, you never know what somebody's going to hear, right? You don't know if they're going to hear the whole conversation. You don't know if they're going to come in on they're going to read the whole article. I mean, right? I mean, it's just the way the world is. So you have to be, you need to be careful. I mean, there's people right now that don't want to go out even if they're vaccinated. You could still get it. By the way, what was the story with
the best picture I've seen all week was the guy on the motorcycle wearing a mask,
yeah,
but no helmet.
Right.
What's the point of getting vaccinated if you don't trust it enough to leave the house?
Yeah, you know, are you saying it doesn't work, or you know, it makes no sense to me. There is so much thinking now that makes no sense. Maybe it's been that way for a long time, and this is, you know, as we were talking earlier about catalysts, maybe this is the catalyst that is exposing it, you know, exponentially. But I don't know. We're in such a weird time where logic makes no sense. Science makes no sense. You know, all of it is just completely blanked up.
Speaking of which, can either one of you sports mavens walk me through the episode 2 weeks ago where John Rahm had to get out of the golf tournament when he was leading, and the guy had been vaccinated and ended up not having it? What exactly happened?
I don't think he had been vaccinated.
Oh, I thought he had been.
Right. So they have rules that everyone agrees to, that if you're not vaccinated, I guess you're required to do extensive testing or something like that. And if you test positive, you're out of the tournament. And they all agreed to him before the tournament. That was my understanding of it.
Okay.
Now, I haven't read much more deeply than that. But, so he was, subject to increased testing because he chose not to be vaccinated. And then he tested positive. So he was out. And that was the rules that were agreed upon before the season. That's my understanding. Now,
okay.
There may be more to it than that I'll have to go back and read. But
I heard some story about somebody in his foursome that had it or something, and he was it was a contact issue.
Yeah, I think that could be part of it. Yeah, so he more strict rules applied to him because he chose not to be vaccinated according to the PGA rules.
Right. So there's eight people. There's two golfers the last day, and two caddies. All right. So. If the other three guys are vaccinated and they say it's all right with them, what's the difference?
I don't disagree with that. That's not the point, though.
Yeah, that's not the point.
Rules were established that both sides agreed upon entering the tournament, and that's it. And he broke the rules, or whatever happened.
Or the rule was applied.
Exactly, the rule was applied.
Better way to say it, Matt.
Exactly.
I brought up the subject last night as I stopped by our watering hole, the Tripoli Tap, and. My old attorney buddies, which you learn an awful lot from, and I asked the question: Why are people giving Rizzo so much grief about not getting this vaccination?
And Hayward.
But start out with Rizzo.
Because they didn't know about Hayward. Now it's
right.
Both of them.
But Rizzo is a cancer survivor that most people should know, and he probably doesn't really want to take anything like that. Not saying he's right or wrong, but I'm not a cancer survivor. And then. When my old attorney buddy says to me, "You have no idea what this guy does for people." I go, "What do you mean?" He says, "Well, one of my family members or cousin or somebody or other, a 2-year-old girl had some nasty cancer, and they said she's got no chance. She was at Lurie's. Rizzo and his wife visited her like 4 times a week. And turns out she made it, but the funny part was she was Irish. She was a Sox fan. Rizzo kept trying to bring her, trying to say, "Well, you know, I come visit
you. The dark side.
Yeah, you got to at least become a Cub fan." She refused to do it. So finally, one night he went and had a hat made that was half Sox, half Cubs. and she agreed to wear that. She made the concession.
I bet she's a Rizzo fan. Whether she's a Cub fan or not, I bet she's a Rizzo fan.
He said, but the guy was there, you know, and his wife would come with him. He said the guy'd be there 2-3 nights a week.
I personally don't understand why people are not getting vaccinated, but I don't really care that much. I think people can do whatever they want. But Rizzo has done more for the Lurie's and cancer research and just charitable work in general than probably any Chicago athlete we've ever had.
Right.
And you'll never hear me say a negative thing about the guy.
So here's the catch. Here's the impact and why some people are criticizing him, even though his teammates don't seem to have a major problem with it. And that is that if you reach a percentage threshold for vaccinations on the team and the key people involved, you know, managers, and, you know, those that are around all the time, then you get relaxed protocols. And the Cubs haven't made it and don't appear to be likely to make it. So, you know, what some of the criticism Rizzo has gotten for it is that he is keeping his teammates from getting relaxed protocols. Now, if they don't care, then I don't know why anybody else has to be a busybody about it.
Was that why Pat Hughes and those guys still aren't flying with the team?
Could be.
I think that's just a league-wide mandate that announcers aren't flying with the team this season for any team. But Kevin's exactly right. Yeah, the tier one personnel, quote unquote. So anyone that's with the team on a daily basis, like player, you know, coaches, trainers, manager, etc. Once you get to 85%, they relax the protocols immensely. And most teams in MLB have hit the 85%, but the Cubs and a handful of others refuse to. And now they have to have stricter protocols because that's the rules that were agreed upon by the union and the league.
Is there any, I'm sure there isn't because I
But that's between Anthony, as far as I'm concerned, that's between Anthony Rizzo and his team. And if they don't have a problem with it, then why would anybody else have a problem with it?
Well, what if,
Does it create a competitive disadvantage? Because not that I have a problem with it necessarily, but I'd like the Cubs to not have a competitive disadvantage.
Well, what if?
I mean, yeah. Well, I'd agree to that. But again, do you think as a cancer survivor, do you think that Anthony Rizzo might be more tapped into, evaluating his personal medical situation than most? And yeah. My answer to that is, yeah, I am sure he is.
I'm sure he is too.
It's not a frivolous decision. It's not a knee jerk decision in his case. I'm more inclined to think that Anthony Rizzo has some pretty, personal but important to him reasons for not doing it because of his health history and what he knows about himself.
I would love it if he came out. I would love it if he came out and said, "Hey, I've sat down with my doctor. I've talked with some other people, and as a cancer survivor, we weighed the risks, and we decided that." We're not going to do it at this time. I'm not saying I'm never going to do it. You know, if we get new information, maybe I will. But the good does not outweigh the bad based on being a cancer survivor. If he said that, I think most general people could accept that. He didn't say that, one. And then two, I still don't understand why, you know, the 10 other guys that haven't done it, the Jake Arriettas and the Jason Haywards and some of the others that aren't cancer survivors, what the hell are they doing?
What if they already hit it?
I already had it, and I still got vaccinated.
Okay, but I'm saying why...
Because it doesn't last forever.
Okay, it lasts as long as a shot.
Maybe.
Well, okay.
Well, like, there's a lot of people who have concerns about, about the spike proteins in the body that, you know, when they got the emergency youth authorization for it. One of the selling points behind it was that those spike proteins, reside locally where in the muscle where it's injected, and that is not the case. And we know that's not the case now. So, you know, you're in a realm. Now, there's a lot of people who believe that you see this unusual incidence of myocarditis. Medical terms suck. Basically inflammation of the heart in young people, and that may be tied to the spike proteins. Well, you know, I hear that and I say, you mean the vaccine knows only to do this to young people? Or maybe it's noticeable among young people because it's such an unusual occurrence in the age group of 20 years old, plus or minus a little bit. And so it's getting measured there, but in people maybe my age where, heart issues are very, very common, or, you know, not very common, but are much more common, that it's kind of getting buried in the stats there. Is that possible? We don't know that yet. So there's a lot of reasons for caution. There's also, a couple of other vaccines that are in development that don't use the mRNA technology, which has never been successfully tested in all previous attempts.
Kevin, is it the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, not mRNA?
That's viral vector, which is same family of technology and also the same thing that's being used for the first time. But so Novavax is probably going to be out in September, and that's one that is technology that has been in the field for a long time, used for malaria, for flu, and so on. And there's another one, I can't remember the name of it, that is an oral vaccine that'll be like a once a year, and it's in the testing process, and it's a much more traditional, you know, it's the traditional type of vaccine that we've always had. So there's a lot of, and I'm telling you, this is where I am on it, because I have not gone to the vaccine. because I, you know, I have a bad family heart history, and I'm being very cautious about that, understanding that the counterbalance is that COVID-19 is a respiratory disease, and as a respiratory disease, you know, that's not good for heart history either. And we also know that there are good treatments now that were ignored before in the name of trying to get these vaccines out, because when, you know, when if ivermectin, for example, is a really good treatment, and the whole whole vitamin protocol that goes with it, which I take, we wouldn't have been approving them in the first place. So we ignored them, and it turns out that they have proven, you know, they have the data behind them to say that they're effective, but the studies got deferred, so they haven't gone through any of the normal trial process.
Real quick, because we got a dash, but the Cleveland Clinic's study that came out last week that I talked about for a second, basically, I don't think you were here, Manny, but...
No, I read it.
That thing is going. They basically said that.
To me, that was common sense. I already thought I knew that.
Yeah, well, but they said there was no difference between the people that had it and the people who got vaccinated. And out of 52,000.
Which that's a good thing. I think means the vaccines are good.
Yeah, oh, yeah. But there are 52,000 people, there hadn't been one recurrence. And they said that there was really no difference between. I will say this, though. I mean, and some people, from what I understand, because I have friends that have gone for the antibody test. Now, when I went for the antibody test, They were blinking strong, so I feel confident in, you know, waiting another month or two for the vaccine. Eventually, I think it'll wear off, and I'll have to get it. But some people, if they're in poor health, if they have the COVID and they survive, they don't have much of the antibodies. They have trouble now. Whether they'll have trouble producing them from the shot as well, you know, that's another story. But we're learning as we go here, and I just, you know, you're so many winging stones at people. Kevin, talk to you on Friday, bud.
I consider myself in the control group still.
I think you're in the control group, like, on a lot of things. Just staying, you know. many control groups. SBFutures down 3, SBFutures down 275. Back, Mr. Russell Rhodes, going to make head or tail out of the Fed announcement today.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
There's something happening here.
Blowing up expectations, Jackson. I'm Tom Ali. Just met Weber on the board. SP Futures down 250. NASDAQ Futures down 1050. We're slow and boring, really, all around the world, except they're down pretty heavy in China. Not real heavy, but 1%, 2% in a couple of the exchanges.
You don't want to be described as slow and boring. Just in general.
No. One or the other is okay, but...
if a girl says you're slow and boring, that's
not good.
Yeah,
now,
punch to come
but now
up
if
from.
you were slow,
then I know what you are. If a girl's hanging out with you and you're slow and boring, you're rich.
Oh, yeah. That's exactly right.
Or as Audrey says, he looks pretty short, but he sits on his wall and he gains all kinds of height.
yeah.
So if you're slow and boring, if you're just slow, do you drop into? Who was the song? She wants a man with an easy touch, not come and go in a heated rush. What was the song?
What is that song?
Wow, it was a good one. So she liked them slow. She just didn't like them boring. Just saying. No, yeah, slow and boring is bad. It's bad. It's like whatever. Yeah. So Russell...
I think that's how my teenage daughters kind of describe me.
Well, if they didn't think you were, it wouldn't be healthy, you know, type of thing.
I think you just quoted a Pointer Sisters song, "Slow Hand."
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good for you.
So you would be one of those guys that if you were a professional golfer like Tom Lehman, and was in a U.S. Open, that all his daughters were big Tiger fans and wanted Tiger to win and not the old man. He admitted to that.
That sounds about right. Actually. My kids periodically remind me that I'm not the smartest guy on the block because the next door neighbor went to Harvard. They do. They've told me, "Oh, well, you're nowhere near as smart as Mr. Eckert, who's went to Harvard and was a lawyer. Who's a super nice guy, by the way." So I tell him that they say that too. He thinks it's hilarious.
Did I tell you about the one time when I was not the one time, one of the many times that I was a total knucklehead, and. Maddie, remember when we had all the guys coming through the hood that we had like three people running for alderman, right? And so some guy comes by and he says, you know, you want to vote for, you know, Joe Jamoak. And I said, well, I don't know, all three candidates seem pretty decent. He goes, well, he's right out here. Guy comes wandering in his suit and everything, decent enough looking guy. He starts telling me, well, you know, I went to Harvard. And I go, you know, I used to live near two people that went to Harvard. And he goes, really? Were they good guys? I said, well, one was the Unabomber. And the other one came back from Harvard and blew his parents away with a shotgun. The guy looks at me and he goes, I hope you're not going to hold that against me. He said, no, I wouldn't do that.
That's a great response.
But really, I lived two blocks from the Unabomber in Evergreen Park. And the other guy came back from Harvard, and a couple of years later, he's living at home, and he was kind of a weirdo duck to start with. And all of a sudden, one day, there's all kinds of squad cars and ambulances, and the parents are blown away with a shotgun. I'm like, whoa, it's... Kind of ends it all. It's kind of a thing.
I only know one guy that went to Harvard, and he went there on a football scholarship. He was a big tight end.
No, they don't have football scholarship. He went there on a academic scholarship. He just happened to play
academic
football.
Scholarship, but he could play football.
Yeah. Right. Well, what bothered me about it was this guy was nowhere near as smart as anyone I knew. Like, I don't think he was smarter than me. I'm like, how the hell did this...
Extracurricular.
So basically, he got a football scholarship without getting a football scholarship, but he definitely was not Harvard academic quality. So they must make some exceptions.
Oh, God, yeah. I told you.
Oh, yeah, they do. They absolutely do. It's why I've been pushing my my oldest daughter, who's fairly good at tennis, to keep pushing at it, because that kind of stuff will help you get into a better school. I dated somebody who was very competitive with somebody in high school that ended up getting into Penn, and the reason she got into Penn was because she agreed to play tennis while she was there.
There you go.
I told you the story years ago. Audrey's friend, who I don't know whatever happened to her, but had two sons. One was a big star at football and baseball, and he pretty much bagged them both. But the younger kid grew. The older kid was one of these that. You know, he was already shaving at age 12 kind of guy, Russell, you know, where he just was ahead of himself.
Yeah. Peaked early.
Yeah, now the younger brother ends up being, you know, 6'3", 220, just a rack. And he's a terrific first baseman, right? So the coach from Stanford comes out, and the kid gets, he's a smart kid. He's like, you know, 300 kids graduate, he's like number 10. He gets a ride to Stanford. Which is okay. You know, I don't think any of us have a problem with that, except the number one graduate, some young lady, and the number two graduate, another dude, both apply to Stanford and get flushed. They don't even get in. And the number 10 guy, because he can play baseball, gets a ride, an academic ride. So, yeah, they're, allowances are made. Is that a fair way to say it?
I like that. Allowances are made.
Yes,
allowances are made. All right, so I have a...
That's them getting well-rounded students.
Yeah, so you want to get well-rounded students. Sort of like bringing somebody in from Korea because his dad pays full boat, you know, type of thing.
Or hiring somebody at your law firm because he can help the intramural basketball team.
Yeah. Well, you wouldn't believe the amount
of... The Lawyers League team.
Well, you wouldn't believe how many clerks on the trading floor were hired because they could play softball or basketball.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, I got a very deep question for you, and it's not about Wells, but it's... When you look at the history of inflation, and more I read this stuff, because obviously it's a topic du jour, and I've been reading more about the Weimar Republic and these other places, it seems like the case that we had in the late 60s through the 80s was somewhat unusual, Russell, in that, well, at least from what I read, I'm asking you if there's stuff I haven't read yet. It started here, I'm going to say almost on the blue-collar, they poured money into it, so it already had started. And then the Arab oil embargoes came along, and it fired up in one area where the citizenry was outraged, you know, at the Arabs, but you know, because they didn't probably know enough collectively to say, "Gee, it's the Fed doing it." And by the way, it just happened to start here. It would have started somewhere else otherwise. But it kind of went through the system to where interest rates started to go up immediately, and your banks or savings and loans started to pay rates to where, if you had money, you never really got hurt. Stock market, because the rates went up, started to plummet, because why would you want to go get a stock when you can make 13% in the bank, or 8 or 10 early on? And that's the way it went here. And I've always felt that that's kind of the way it always goes. And yet, you look at other places, that's not what happened at all. You look at the Weimar, you look at Iran, you look at Argentina, you look at Venezuela. And to a certain extent, right now, it's happening in Turkey, where the interest rates for individual stuff don't necessarily run up, and everybody pours their money in the market, and the market goes to the moon, which is kind of what... I mean, in Weimar Republic, I think it went from, 200 to 1 million, the market average. Even though, you know, people were getting eviscerated because anybody who had savings were now worthless and everything else. But we're almost like... right now, we're not going... at all like we did in the 70s, we're going like the Weimar Republic. Why? And why is that? Why is it because a possible reason, is it because the Fed, no matter, I mean, back in the 70s, you didn't have the Fed saying, we don't care what we do to our balance sheet, we're not letting the 30-year bond go above 5, we're just going to buy them all if we have to. We didn't. That was not in the Federal Reserve's playbook in the 70s. So we had an outcome then, and now that outcome seems to be being changed by the Fed saying, I don't care if the inflation rate's 6%. I'm going to make these 10-year rates 1.5. And by the way, I'll make up some more money and buy them. If you try and fight me, good luck. The last 6 weeks where these rates have actually gone down and the bond's gone back up is probably one of the top five unusual events I've seen since I've been trading. I don't know where that's coming from, and it has to be coming from these guys $30 billion a week. And I just wonder, where do you think the outcome of that is? Are we going to be the Weimar Republic? Are they eventually going to, you know, have a trillion dollar balance sheet, and all of a sudden then it's going to start, and somebody's going to say we can't get any bigger? I mean, or is it going to work? What do you think the outcome is? I mean, you obviously are closer to the research on this than me. It seems just odd.
The thing, I can argue both sides of it, and it's not me trying to not be wrong, because I'm happy to give a strong opinion if I think there's one to give.
Well, that's why I asked you, because I can argue both sides.
But anecdotally, looking around the world, things getting more expensive. There's just no other way to put it. And you can feel it. I always use my McDonald's breakfast thing, and over the course of 3 years, it went up by about 30%, which, you know, it's not the biggest deal in the world because it's only a couple of bucks a day, but first off, that adds up. But that's coming from higher expenses, whether it's labor or, you know, the food cost at McDonald's. They've got to pass it along somehow. And that's going to get, so you see things like that. And I think everybody can give you one or two anecdotal things like that. Hell, I only had to fill up half my tank yesterday and it was about 60 bucks.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You always pay attention to the gas because you actually get, you go get your gas every Sunday morning, from
right.
what I remember. So there's all this great anecdotal stuff out there. And, but on the other side of it is when you look at the financial markets and you look at the derivative markets, they're saying no chance at inflation over the next 2 or 3 years. It goes, I mean, there's a very small chance of a rate hike this year, and I know we could get different news on that later today, but the derivative markets are telling you that inflation is not going to be a problem, that this is, whatever they're doing is working, and the financial markets are believing it. I mean, hell, you wouldn't have stocks bid up every day, and I don't care what they say about retail traders. Retail traders are not pushing the S&P 500 by themselves to new highs over and over again. It's institutional money. So the financial markets say there's nothing to see here. They're Officer Bob Rainey. Whereas when you leave the house from day to day, I feel like you really do get hit in the face with inflation, you know, over and over again. So which one is real? And the financial markets are basing everything off of economic numbers that are given to us by the government, and I'm just getting to where I just don't trust the government more and more. And
well, Russell,
definitely don't trust the methodology behind the numbers they give us.
Russell, I guess my question is, and there's no, I have a feeling, I mean, I know where I stand on this. And the reason why I do is, you know, the people who listen to our show and come on our show aren't the only people that have a slight amount of common sense in the world. I mean, nobody puts their money, even if they think the inflation is 2%, which I don't know where that boob is, other than being on the Federal Reserve, where I don't know where that boob is. Even if it's 2%, nobody gives their money to anybody for 10 years for 1.5%. It's a trade that is so out in left field that if you did it for somebody, if I got your dad's money or your money and I did that with the dough, I mean, I better go find a bulletproof house somewhere. I mean, nobody would let anybody do that with their money. And yet, that's where they are. And the only random element is the Fed's $30 billion a week where they're buying all this crap. I mean, if you pull that random element out, I got to believe it goes right back to where you and I think it ought to be.
Yeah.
What else could it be? What would possess me to buy a bond at 1.5%? I would do it if I thought the Fed was going to come buy it from me at 1.45 and I'm going to make money on it. Do you think for a second I'm going to hold this thing for 10 years? What manner of
I really do not understand anybody buying bonds right now.
Well, you do if you think there's somebody's going to buy it the next day from you, right?
Yeah. Well, but how can you believe that?
Well, but it's short term.
I don't think
Zoom.
But even short term, even with the 10-year rate, what, around 1.5 or so right now?
But if you and I were market makers in Zoom, I'll say, I'm going to guess we would agree. I want to see where Zoom is. I would guess we market makers aren't good, that it's probably not worth $360 or $358 when they got $8 a share in revenue. But if the market is 58 and a half, and there's buyers and sellers, you and I are going to buy it at 358 100 times today, thinking we could sell it at 358 and a half. We don't. It doesn't.
Right, but what leads you as a bond trader to think that there's more potential upside than downside in bonds right now?
The Fed's $30 billion a week. This week, they're buying. I can sell it to them. I sure as hope they buy it because I don't want to carry it over the weekend. But right now, I got a buyer, and it's the government.
But they've been buying, and rates have been right around where they are right now. So they've been buying stuff that's typically just kind of sitting there, not going up. They're not pushing the prices up. Now, I can understand if rates pop up to 2% and you think, well, this is unwarranted, that inflation's not going to be happening, but the, you know, but we've faded back down to where the market's not anticipating that. So I just don't, I guess I would have to talk to a bond trader that maybe tells me what I'm missing on this one, but I just don't.
But if you're,
market condition wise, maybe it's a matter of, you know, if you buy bonds, it's kind of like people that buy SPACs when the SPAC says, if we don't find anything to invest in 18 months, we'll give you your money back.
Well, if you're a trader,
maybe
though, Russell,
is at the worst, I'm not going to lose anything.
Russell, if you're a trader, you really, as long as half the people are buying and half the people are selling, you really don't care. But the thing that would cause you concern, I think, as a very bright guy, if every single time the buyer is one customer, then you're going to sit there and say, I better be careful on my buy side size, because what if this guy doesn't show up? I mean, you'd love it if,
yeah,
you know, you'd love it if you're trading, telephone 30 years ago where, you know, there isn't somebody who does two trades in a day. There's, you know, it's the most widely held stock on earth, and there's, you know, 1,000 people that have bought them during the day and 1,000 people that have sold them. That way you're somewhat secure that you're right there. But if you were doing the, when Nassimo almost bought the Philly because they had the French franc, contract, and it did so much business, right? Was it the French, before they had the Euro dollar? And it turned out that, there were only three customers. when they lost the three customers, they like lost the whole thing. I'm sitting there going, well, it's a lot different than saying, wow, we're doing 10,000 contracts a day. That's good. Well, there's three people doing 3,000 a piece. That's not so good, right?
That's not so good, yeah.
So, I mean, I guess I don't know. But it seems to me what you just said is absolutely accurate. But you look at the Fed balance sheet, the last 6 weeks it's going straight up. You could make the argument, which I think you just did, that the Fed is doing more and more to stay in the same place.
Yeah, I mean they're propping us up. And that's another thing. Just governmental interference to make sure free markets do something. You know, why do we have George Soros as a person? Other than he's just pure evil. His biggest trade was realizing that the British government could not prop up the pound forever, that eventually market forces were going to catch up with him.
Well, yeah.
So again, you know, if you think that the Fed's your backstop, at what point do they possibly, are they not able to continue to prop things up?
Well, if you figured back in those days when he did that, he had a you know, somewhat of a, I'll use the term, he felt that there was a governor and politicians, and I'll use the Fed as politicians. He was going to say, because you remember those days, Russell, when people when the Bank of Japan would enter the currency market and try and save the yen, and then the next day the yen's down further than it was before, which to you and me as a trader, it just means that the Bank of Japan was a horrible trader and they just pissed away $2 billion, right? I mean, in their mind, they were trying to save the yen. In our mind, these idiots just lost $2 billion, right? Well, when Soros did it, there was some, I'll use the term, economic morality to where even the British, after 5 and 6 days of it not working, would say, all right, we're going to stop. The market forces are against us, and that's when he made his money. Right, something like that. I mean, you know, well, now I think that if Soros is doing this, and I don't know the man at all, if he were to say,
I don't know what he's doing now.
But if he were to say, take the same attitude, and he would say at $2 trillion the balance sheet, he would say, God, the Fed's never been here before. They're not going to go through 2.5. Nobody would even conceive of that. So I'm going to short these bonds. Well, I'm going to say, Soros has been carried out feet first 15 times since then, because now they're up to $8 trillion without any chance, without any hint of stopping. So whatever kind of moral, limit to what the British were doing, when they reached it, they stopped. Our guys are not stopping. And they can't be stopping in the European Union because they still got negative rates. What's the inflation rate in Europe? And they got negative rates. So, I mean, they're not stopping either. Weren't you the ones that told me that on some of the CUSIP numbers, they own like 80% of all the bonds? Over there, the central
bank. I didn't tell you that, but I've heard that statistic from other folks.
I mean,
I've gone on Bloomberg and I've looked at like the bond ETFs to see, you know, how much the government owns, and they're up there on the list, not the highest owner, but they're up there.
What percentage of the 10-year auction last week or a week ago, last Wednesday, I think it was now, they came in at 1.48, and it was like, what percentage of those bonds do you think now sit on the Fed's balance sheet? Go ahead.
No idea, but more and more from week to week, as long as we stay in the same place that we're in.
Yeah, man.
What we started talking about was, you know, bonds to trade bonds. I mean, I guess if you buy something and you assume that there's a total backstop, that you're okay and you're just going to wait for maybe a small bounce to make money off of trading them. But I just think the risk reward behind buying bonds right now, especially for a short-term trade, it's just not so good. There's a good technical term for you. I'm not a fixed income guy, so I might be completely missing something. This is my weakest market to talk about.
The trading of it is...
There's a big disclaimer when somebody comes back to us next week and says, I shorted bonds because of what Russell Rhodes was saying and I got killed. No, I mean, I'm just saying that I don't get it.
Well, I mean, I don't get the buy side.
That doesn't necessarily mean that I think that, you know, that we should be taking the other side.
Well, I mean, there's not much difference me trading the OEX than somebody trading the 30-year bond pit 20 years ago. I mean, the bid and offer, I mean, basically, what do you do as a trader? You got half the people buying, half the people selling, and if you can pick a price where everybody buys it at one tick and sells it back to you at one tick less, it's beautiful. You go home flat, right? You don't normally look to see who the people are, but like I said, if it's all one sided on one side, you're going to sit there and go, I don't know about this one, right? I mean, it's SP futures down a whole buck now. NASDAQ futures up 17 as we wait for the Fed announcement. Be right back with Mr. Russell Rhodes.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck, get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor,
low interest rates, and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howie, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures down 75 cents. NASDAQ futures up 17. So we're right in our pre-Fed kind of we're waiting and seeing for a couple days here. It's been yesterday the S&Ps were up 10 at 8:45, and I think they were up 10 plus or minus $2 the whole day. It was like it was when you could go through everybody's portfolio, make sure everything was right. It was one of those kind of days, but the idea of
you could get lost on Baseball Reference.
Oh, absolutely, without a doubt. Dow futures are down 50 over in Europe. We've got DAX down 29. It's a little more than earlier, 0.2%. The FTSE over is up 2. That's flat. Ekron up 2. That's flat. So again, like I said, pretty slow over there as they've wind down the G7 meeting and a lot of stuff been going on. We haven't seen too much of that news here, but I think it's probably all over what's going on in Europe. Nikkei, however, down 150. It's 0.5%. Shanghai down 38. It's over 1%. The Shenzhen, which again, I don't usually give, is down more than 2%. Hang Seng down 201. That's 0.7. So mainland Asia is getting whacked a little bit this morning. Not sure exactly why. Yesterday was a wave review. The Dow was down 94. S&P was down 8. NASDAQ was down 101, which is roughly the same as we were up the last hour on Monday night. So again, not much direction this week. 10-year, 1.49. The Bund, minus 0.24. Japan, positive 0.05. Oil continues to run up here. Up 26 cents, 72.38. Brent, 74.36, almost up to 30.75, which would certainly be a milestone. Those guys haven't been there in a long time. Natural gas, down 4 cents, 3.20. RBOB, down a penny, 2.16. Old gold with a, we're talking about a dead cat bounce, up 3.60 to 1.1860. Silver up 20 cents, 27.89. Silver cannot get out of this 26.50 to 29 range here at all, seemingly. Like copper up a penny, 4.36, 4.34. And we've got crypto down $1,100 now to 38,983 as they traded above 40,000 yesterday for the first time in a while. Maddie, what do you got for us? When I say crypto, I'm talking about Bitcoin. Maddie, what do you got for us? Trevi Brothers Sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We had a couple of earlier crashes down south. Those are now clear, both on the inbound Ryan and on the inbound Stevenson. So that's the good news. The bad news is that traffic is building steadily here on the Eisenhower. I-290 is our slowest moving expressway right now. No accidents to report, just a lot of traffic volume. And it's going to take you a while to get into downtown. Looks like we're about 50 minutes where is that? Looks like Austin to the old post office. So it's going to be a little while, but everything else, all quiet out there on the accident front. No issues on the Edens, traffic building on the Kennedy, but no crashes to report. Same for the Stevenson. Southside expressways are all good, as that earlier crash at 95th Street on the Ryan is clear. Weather today, speaking of clear, a beautiful, sunny, cool day today, a high of just 73, a bit warmer inland. Right now it's crystal clear and 63 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 115. Right now it's clear and 96. In sports, the White Sox shut out the first place Rays last night 3-0. Cubs lost to the Mets 3-2. Chris Bryant was hit in the hand and left the game, but x-rays were negative after the game, so that's good news. He'll likely be out today, but could be back by tomorrow or this weekend. Diamondbacks lost to the Giants 9-8. Chief.
I would say real quick here as I'm looking at some of the news, doesn't it feel good to have two mass shootings in like 72 hours in Chicago, an 8-lot and a 10-lot? And it's not, did it get any press at all?
We broke a record. I didn't know we were going to go in this direction, but we broke a record. It was the fastest ever to 300 murders. We beat it by a day. We hit 300 on the year as a, and I say we, I don't live in Chicago anymore, but June 14th.
Nice.
The record was June 15th.
I'm glad to hear that we're, you know, doing well in some ways, beating some records.
And this doing something right, yeah.
This is after we learn how to patch people together way better than we did 30 years ago.
Right, that's the whole thing. Is
oh, yeah.
It would be a lot more if we had this amount of shootings 30 years ago.
We had 1,404 shot and wounded, and we've got shot and killed
293. You know, what I'm getting ready to say sounds horrible, but it's probably not the worst idea in the world. If you've got somebody that's going to be an army doctor in the next conflict, put them at Cook County.
Yeah. Well, everybody.
That'd probably be the best training. I mean, honestly, I know that just sounds just cold and awful, but they may be, you know, that might be the closest to training for going into combat you can get is being here.
Except Cook County is actually located now. Not that they don't get people, they do. But the South Side stuff is actually fairly far away from Cook County. University of Chicago and Christ are getting most of that. And who gets the stuff on the west side, man? There's a trauma center further west.
I'm not sure.
Well, that would be Stroger.
No, there's somebody further west than that, but there's another one out there.
Stroger gets a lot, too, though.
Well, Stroger is county.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there is one further west.
Yeah, I don't know who the other trauma centers
are. You guys, you'll check a portfolio, Chief. You guys will play around with Baseball Reference. I go look at the Chicago Scanner on Twitter when things are slow.
You don't.
It seems like they're always sending the which is really, I mean, funny.
Well, one thing that has to change here.
Some of the things are really hilarious. I have a friend whose kid grew up in London, and he's got this really, you know, high-pitched English accent. And I had him read some of the Chicago Scanner tweets, his baby daddy isn't making any payments and he's on drugs. She wants him removed. Hearing him say things like that was just hilarious.
God. Well, here's a change that's going to have to happen. Now, when I say this, is you ever go to Hey Jackass?
Oh, yeah. That's where I get my stat. That's where you and I both get my stat.
Okay, but now here's the issue. They, in a previous world, they would list all the stuff on the weekends, every shooting, and whether somebody died or not, and the person, whether what age and sex and so forth. And they really didn't give you that kind of detail between Monday noon and Friday noon. They're going to have to start doing that, because Tuesday night we had the 10 lot of people killed or shot, right? On the south side?
Yeah.
What, two dead and eight wounded or something? So they're going to have to expand this to the whole week, because we don't care now whether it's nighttime. We don't care whether it's a weekday. It's expanded to the point where
it
doesn't even matter. The two blocks from the office on Saturday, the guy got shot 60 bullets. Now, they can't find the guy, but they had police out here for 4 hours identifying every one of the 60 bullets. Who gives a crap about the 60 bullets?
You know, put those little markers up and collected all the...
The only good news in the whole mess is the guy was in the car with his dog, and evidently the dog got saved. The dog's okay. Well, he got operated on, but he's okay.
Good.
The guy's not, you know. Yeah. But we're talking 1:30 in the afternoon.
I have a funny feeling that dog's going to really have a tough time around the 4th of July.
Oh, God. Yeah, I'm thinking. Now, that area, there's like 4 or 5 high-rises down there. It has to be, if you drive there anytime in the middle of the day... Maddie, can you think, other than maybe our neighborhood up north, can you think of a more dog-friendly neighborhood? If you don't see 50 people walking their dog.
They're everywhere.
Now, how the hell this guy managed to shoot 60 bullets off at 1:30 in the afternoon and only kill the one guy? I can't imagine that. The place is loaded with people. I'm happy that's what happened, but anyway. So, Russell, we had a gentleman on CNBC 2 weeks ago, and he just went through the numbers from the 70s till essentially in contrasting it with today. And he said that in the 70s, when this all started, when the interest rates started creeping up, that the PE ratio, the average PE ratio in stocks was about 18, 17 maybe. And the stocks didn't go under, went down to 10 or less because, you know, essentially you had to compete earnings wise and dividend wise with the banks, which were paying 10%. So, you know, there's a method to the madness. You go back, you go down to a 10 PE ratio, right? Because at least your money's making the same amount at the company you invested in than they are in the bank, right? That would be the connection there. So he said that equaled basically a 40% drop in the market from top to bottom or whatever, and or 40 or 45. And he said, well, if the same thing happens now, if we go to a 7 or 8% interest rate or even 6.5, 7 from where we are now, he goes, the P.E. ratios in a lot of these stocks are you know, they're like 100, you know, or 80 or 85. But let's say the real stocks are 20. You know, your stuff like Triple M and, you know, Caterpillar, they're all like 20. He says, well, if they're going to go to 10, they're all going to drop 50%, and these other ones are going to drop like 75. Man, they got the hook on him so quick on CNBC. But it's, I'm not saying the guy's right, but if what he says is true, if we're going to run the interest rates up because we're going to let inflation get out of the mix, how does that not happen? It does. By identity.
Yeah, I mean,
it has to happen. Right?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what, when I'm in the first half hour, that's exactly the stuff I'm looking at, is that it's, you know, they think, you know, there's just so many disconnects right now. Something's got to give. You know what I mean? And I think we're going to get a big old spike in inflation in the next 18 to 24 months at the latest.
Well, make sure it's not there already.
Do what?
It's happening now.
Let's put it this way. There's the inflation that we know is out there. We see it. We're living it. But it hasn't hit the financial market. So when I say a big old spike of inflation, I mean that actually impacts the financial markets.
Where people all of a sudden their eyes light up and say, we really got it. Just, here's something. I don't know if you know the dates. February 77. February 77.
You and I have always talked about how we're so close to these situations that we're usually early on these things.
Yeah.
That's what I think is going on right now. Is that, and you and I are old enough to recall, I mean, I recall the late 70s, early 80s type of inflation. I really do, because I was approaching 16 and car prices kept running away from me.
Yep.
I mean, that's really, and I want to work something in here that I read yesterday.
Please do.
And I've seen in multiple places. Apparently, Jamie Dimon said that they've just got a lot of cash on the sideline because they want to be prepared to buy because they think inflation is coming. Well, isn't that, I mean, if you just got, isn't the cash going to be worth less if we use inflation? Why would we do that?
You know,
I don't know where else you put it, but why would you put it there?
If other people aren't ready for it, he's probably talking about buying some other banks. Not just piling into the stock market, because I don't think they buy individual stocks. They maybe they do, but
yeah.
I think he's talking about assets, which be other banks.
Well, it says, has effectively been stockpiling cash rather than using it to buy treasuries and other investments because of the possibility of higher inflation will force the Federal Reserve to boost interest rates.
Also, he's going to
that's something I totally agree with.
Yeah, he's going to get his treasuries cheaper.
Well, if you think that's going to happen instead of stockpiling cash, aren't there a few other places that you might want to think about putting the money?
Well, yeah, hey.
Like hard assets. You know, I know a lot of the inflation trades have already been entered. And even though I say that the markets aren't discounting inflation, you know, copper prices going higher, lumber prices going higher, gold's gone up. Yeah, you know, one that hasn't that you mentioned was that silver seems to be stuck in a range. I'll tell you when silver's going to go up. It's the day that I sell calls against my silver holding.
Well, I think right now steel is the new.
Because I've actually been doing it periodically. But
steel is the new precious.
I'm gonna have short calls on at the wrong time.
Steel is the new precious metal. It's going up like a weed. I'd much rather be in steel than in the gold and silver I am. Not sure why that is now, but
oh, yeah.
You know, what's interesting, Russell, is that I said I was on yesterday with Jonah Esposito, and I've talked to, you know, a lot of people, you know, privately and clients, and that the Federal Reserve now has got, for a long period of time, people may not, you know, go with every single move they make, but they clearly are led into the fact that they are in control, that they'll, and when I mentioned on the air yesterday, I think it was like, Boy, talk about a fart in church. I said, you know, when inflation breaks out, it means they've screwed up and they're out of control. That's the part that I can't communicate to people, because in the 70s, they were out of control. They were chasing. I'm looking right here at my little chart here that I dug up. In January of 72, federal fund rates was 3.51. Fast forward to July of 74, it was 13%. That's not anybody in control, Russell, is it?
Yeah.
I mean,
no, so, not at all. But I didn't, you know, I wasn't, I know what was happening again at the ground level with prices, because I was a teenager, but my impression in reading the history on this thing is they were kind of okay with a bout of inflation.
Very, very early on, and all of a sudden they were like, oh my God, we got to stop this. But right now, the story is, if you read between the lines, if we screw up, I mean, this is Jay Powell talking, if we screw up,
yeah,
we'll just have to run inflation up to, or the interest rates up to 2 or 2.5, and we can peel it all back and everything will be fine. Where history clearly shows, 2.5 doesn't do any good. We're talking about, where do we top out here in federal funds rate? April, what am I, September 1981, guess what it was? This is the federal funds rate.
Oh, is it like 17?
July 81, 19.04.
Yeah, I knew it was upper teens.
But this guy's telling
you. There's a chart I show in class where you see the spike in it.
But here's a guy telling us, don't worry.
It goes to the teens.
Don't worry. If we have to go back to 2.5% and fix it, we will. That's not even on the planet.
That won't work.
Yeah.
You got 5% inflation, that's not going to work.
No. I mean, but inflation by definition is those guys out of control, right? It's not them being in control. And I hope it doesn't, I mean, but the collective memory is this was a miserable time. Actually, I was asked on the air yesterday, why was it so bad? And I said, well, it wasn't even. And I said, even at Pullman, the people who had the escalation clauses were okay. The people who didn't got buried. If you didn't have an escalation clause, and if you weren't a union member, you got buried. If you didn't own a home and were paying rent, you got buried. It's not, not to mention, we took out an entire industry, the savings and loan industry. How many people worked there? How many people do you think worked in the collective savings and loans in 1970 that weren't there in 1982? You know,
oh, tons.
400,000?
And it's not like a bank consolidation where, you know, half of them ended up, they just closed.
Yeah, they're just out. They're just gone.
Yeah.
It had to be 500,000
yeah.
nationwide, don't you think?
Oh, easily. And that's a big number back then.
Oh, God,
we only had 200 million of us.
Yeah. It's a, what do you think of it? What is your opinion? I'm getting some feelings now that, from the clients and customers, well, clients are customers, but some of the guys on the show, that the grand reopening that we've seen, you saw some of the retail sales numbers this week, we're already starting to plateau a little bit after like 3 months of the grand reopening. I hope that doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
What do you see?
Well, I'm sitting here trying to think of months. I know dead air is just awesome, but I'm just trying to think where we would have been at this time. You know, I think people just started ramping up the online shopping this time last year, so that the comparables might not be as favorable as they were in March and April of last year when we were all really panic-stricken. And you can't tell me we weren't panic-stricken. It was like this eerie quiet every time I left the house outside.
Well, the first month The first month we started to open up a little bit. It's kind of the month everybody got their checks, right? So
and that's another thing. When was the money flowing? I can tell you when the checks are because I can see my sister's Venmo, and she got her checks via Venmo.
Good. Well, I mean, a lot of them went out last week for people who didn't make as much in 20 as in 19, right? If they didn't qualify in 19, they could qualify in 20. So I think, what was the number, $2.3 million checks went out last week? Or a week before?
Yeah.
So there's still some percolating through the system.
Some money, so.
Well, there's still percolating through the system.
She got something in May last year. She got something in September, and she got something in December.
Yeah, there were three rounds. There was the 1,200?
I just told you what the inflows were into her. Because somehow she got it deposited into her Venmo, and she doesn't hide her information.
Well, I think it was 1,200. If you're under 75 grand, it was 1,200, 600, and 1,400, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you got?
Yeah.
And so I think...
I didn't get anything because I worked two jobs.
Yeah, you're up there. I didn't get anything.
I got the very first one.
I got the first one.
I think everyone got the first one. I didn't get any other ones.
I didn't get any. No, we should have... We should have doctored our stuff, you know, so we got some stuff.
And I don't. This sounds so cocky. I didn't need it. I was at a university. We were still open. I was given about this time last year another 1 year contract, so I knew I was going to be okay there. And the consulting firm I work for, my focus is market volatility. Well, a pandemic's really good for market volatility, so I was busy there too. I never got a check.
I don't want
my check.
I don't think you need it necessarily, but I think what people, if you're degrading the currency, which is really what we're doing, and I didn't want to go into this with Joan yesterday on the air, but she made a joke that, maybe I should have an escalation clause in my contract. And I said, John, you're not joking there. I mean, I didn't want to go into it with her because I have no idea what she gets paid, none of my business. But really, and I don't think she does, but if she made $1 million a year and had a 5-year contract and didn't have a clause in there, and all of a sudden we do 10% for 5 years, even though $1 million is a lot of money, it's going to be $500,000 in value in 5 years. And you know, if she's good enough to deserve, which she probably, again, it's none of my business. If she's good enough to deserve the million today, she doesn't deserve the thing degrading by half in 5 years. So even though, quote, she doesn't need the money, she doesn't need herself degraded to that extent either, right? Because that would happen if you didn't have that clause. Because I've seen it happen, right? I mean, it's not like $500,000 isn't quote enough and that type of thing. That has nothing to do with it. But nobody. I mean, I that's why I, you know, they were kind of all over me when I said inflation is the cruelest tax of all. Is one of the lines I remember from then, and nobody has any idea what I'm talking about. It affects everybody. I mean, it.
Oh, it does.
I was at Pullman for 3 years, Russell. Everybody got cost of living, but me. I got the maximum raise. The 3 years I was there, which was 5%, so I was up 15, and I'm going to say inflation was up 35 in those 3 years. Tanks for nothing.
Yeah.
So
nobody's getting raises.
No.
It's just, you know, locked-in raises are just not happening, right? What I mean by that is salary raises, not hourly. Because I do think that hourly employees right now are in short supply, so... you see lots of help wanted signs. You know, there was a help wanted sign when I went and got gas last time.
Yeah. Well, what if you were...
At that end, they are having to pay more for labor right now.
Well, and we're both assuming that we're going to have an inflation, but we hope we're wrong, right? But if we do, and it lasts three or 4 years, nobody's talking about you're going to start jumping up in brackets, tax brackets, and you're going to start paying a higher percentage of your income when you're not making any more real wealth, right?
Ooh, I hadn't even thought about that.
Well, that's why Reagan, he lowered the tax rates, but he still had the brackets going for him. So he ended up paying. You know, it's even worse. I'll be like Mr. T. I pity the fool. If you're somebody, and these numbers might have changed a little bit with the Obamacare, if you're somebody who doesn't have any hospitalizations through your work, and you're making $47,000. I think you get a lot of help from Obamacare. This is old news, so I mean, it could be off a little bit. But once you go over 50 for the family, 50 is kind of the magic number where they think you're doing okay.
Mm-hmm.
So if you end up getting a 10% raise 1 year because there's 10% inflation and you happen to bump from 47.5 to 52.5, you're suicidal.
Because
now all of a sudden you probably go up.
Yeah.
Well, the tax bracket, you go up at 80,000, so you're not going up a tax bracket. But you're definitely going up a big chunk in Obamacare to where now you're paying probably $1,300 a month where you probably were paying $4,000 before. Well, that's $12,000 out of the gate. I mean, there's a lot of brackets here that, I mean, 80,000 is when you jump from one level to another, right? So if you're making 75 and after 5 years of inflation you're making 110, it's the same amount of money. Well, you're paying a bigger chunk to the government, right? Especially if the state ever decides to go with an accelerated thing. I mean, there's a lot of little tricks in here that you don't remember if it didn't happen to you, right?
Exactly. And typically you're surprised.
Yeah. Shocked. There's
you know, let's say you're the guy that's and I've been kind of in this situation when I was much younger before I started to get going on my career. I was a trader at a bank, and which did not pay very much. It was like a Southern bank, and I was just an execution trader. But in order to pay for graduate school, I would deliver pizza on the weekends. And on Friday nights and all day, like a 12-hour shift on Sundays to pay for school. If that had bumped me up into another tax bracket, that would have been devastating to me.
Oh, yeah. Right. Well, we got a dash, but let's say...
It would have offset all that extra work.
We got a dash, but you were at a Southern Bank trading executions. How much was an execution down south?
No, I'm an execution trader.
Oh, all right, not those kinds.
Trading stocks for the trust fund, which isn't really a trader.
Not those kinds of executions. Not the ones in Russia. Yeah. All right, bud, see you next week. Have a good one. SP Futures down 50 cents. NASDAQ Futures up 20. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-49.